Are we ready?
Yes.
All right. Good afternoon, everybody. This is the afternoon session of the Portland City Council on September 20th, 2018. Carla, please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Here.
Udaly?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Wheeler?
Here. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the Portland City Council. The City Council represents all Portlanders and meets to do the city's business. The presiding officer preserves order and decorum during City Council meetings so everyone can feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe. To participate in Council meetings, you may sign up in advance with the Council Clerk's Office for communications to briefly speak about any subject. You may also sign up for public testimony on resolutions or the first reading of ordinances. Your testimony should address the matter being considered at the time. When testifying, please state your name for the record. Your address is not necessary. Please disclose if you are a lobbyist. If you are representing an organization, please identify it. The presiding officer determines the length of testimony. Individuals generally have 3 minutes to testify unless otherwise stated. When you have 30 seconds left, a yellow light goes on. When your time is done, a red light goes on. If you are in the audience and would like to show your support for something that's said, please feel free to do a thumbs up. If you want to express that you do not support something, please feel free to do a thumbs down. Disruptive conduct such as shouting or interrupting testimony or council deliberations will not be allowed. If there are disruptions, a warning will be given that further disruption may result in the person being ejected for the remainder of the meeting. After being ejected, a person who fails to leave the meeting is subject to arrest for trespass. Thank you for helping your fellow Portlanders feel welcome, comfortable, respected, and safe.
Thank you very much. Carla, would you please read the first item?
Mm-hmm. Item 997, Direct Procurement Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to develop a program framework and identify the necessary resources to require contractors working on city construction projects to use equipment that controls diesel exhaust to protect public health.
Colleagues, this resolution directs Procurement Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to develop contracting standards for city construction projects that will control diesel exhaust from construction equipment to protect public health. My colleagues and I have heard serious concerns about air quality raised by Portlanders, community organizations, and environmental advocacy groups. Research has shown that Portland faces the highest public health risks from air toxics in the entire state of Oregon, and in particular has the highest levels of diesel particulate pollution. Furthermore, communities of color in low-income populations experience a disproportionate burden of exposure to diesel pollution because they often live and work in areas with higher pollution levels. This resolution signals the city's commitment to addressing the serious air quality challenges that we face. This is an opportunity for us to improve public health while also advancing the city's climate action and equity goals. To that end, my office would also like to offer the following amendment to be inserted after the first "be it further resolved" clause, and this is actually to clarify the role of equity. The amendment is, "be it further resolved that the City Council and Mayor direct Procurement Services and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to ensure the city is achieving its climate action goals through a clean air construction standard that also creates opportunities for workforce equity and diversity, including through reducing barriers to economic opportunity for minority-owned and women-owned companies."
Second.
We have a motion from the mayor, second from Commissioner Fritz, and at this time, without Commissioner Fish.
It is our great tradition here to welcome elected officials from around the country when they join us, and Ralph Remington is here. Ralph, would you stand for a second? Mr. Remington is here actually in the context of a national job search that has brought him as a finalist here. But he is a former member of the Minneapolis City Council.
Ah, excellent.
And as he described it to me, it was a weak mayor form of government, but it was a ward system. So I believe there were 13 and full-time jobs. We represented a ward with a weak mayor. And he represented a district that was overwhelmingly white and served 1 4-year term. And he's here for a couple days. So I just want to welcome our honored guest.
Thank you for being here. We're pleased to have you here, sir.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And our council sessions, as you can tell, are always very subdued and quiet affairs. I hope you enjoy it and find it relaxing.
Count your blessings that there aren't 13 of us, Mayor.
Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Susan Anderson, the Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Good afternoon, Susan.
Good afternoon. As the Mayor said, Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, and with me are Stacey Foreman and Kyle Diesner. So last week, the Mayor and I were in San Francisco at the Global Climate Action Summit, and the focus of that summit was how cities around the world can take control of environmental issues. And we realized very clearly that environmental issues and health issues, especially in the United States, that we can't just rely on the federal government to make improvements. And we also realized that we have this opportunity and really a responsibility to take action locally. So here in Portland, we learned that a long time ago. Many of you have been involved in so many areas where we didn't wait for the federal government. We became leaders in our own right, whether it was energy conservation, renewables, green building, green infrastructure, environmental or conservation zoning, improving water quality, creating all of our wonderful walkable, bikeable neighborhoods. In all those areas, we've been a leader. But one issue we haven't focused much on in the 20-plus years that I've been working here at the city is the topic of local air quality. And for decades, we've relied on the Federal Clean Air Act and on the state with DEQ to regulate air quality and protect local health. And in many ways, the state and federal regulations have worked, and they have been a success. Our air is definitely much cleaner than it was when we were kids, and, well, for some of us in the 70s and 80s. But as clean as the air has gotten, we still have a long way to go. Over the years, we focused primarily on carbon monoxide, on ozone forming, or on smog-forming ozone, other pollutants. But we continue to have a major issue and a major problem with high levels of diesel exhaust, wood smoke, and other toxics. So diesel pollution in particular, it's a known carcinogen. It causes immense respiratory, heart, and nervous system impacts. And this is especially true for those who live or work near construction sites or near the freeways and highways, and for lower-income families, for children, for the elderly, and for communities of color. You know, when Mayor Wheeler came into office and became my boss about a year and a half ago, he agreed very very strongly that there was a need to actively pursue improvements in air quality. So he directed us to identify options to take local action. We worked jointly with the county on this effort and many other agency partners. We hired a third-party consultant. That study looked at a lot of different areas where we could make improvements. A primary recommendation from the study is to move forward with a regional contracting standard for diesel. So today we're here with Procurement Services to do just that. The resolution before you directs Procurement and BPS to work together with the county, with all of the infrastructure bureaus to develop standards and to lead the way. Finally, we know that the health problems around diesel are huge. And like a lot of environmental issues, we can't always make the changes we want to take throughout the community. We know that the city has pretty limited authority to be able to impact diesel use on any private construction projects, but we do have authority over our own projects, and we can make decisions to reduce emissions on city-funded projects. So that's what we're here to talk about. Kyle will begin the discussion of the proposal. He's a BPS project manager, and Stacey Foreman with Procurement Services. I also want to thank Dr. Christine Kendrick on our staff, Christine, who has been working with us on air quality and also very much as one of the key people in the Smart Cities program. And then also John Washatinsky, who I can never say his name, but John with the county has been a great partner, and you'll hear more from him in a bit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Mayor Wheeler, commissioners, thank you for considering this resolution today. I'm Kyle Diesner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I'm going to briefly provide some background on this project and talk about how we got to where we are today, and then my colleague Stacey Foreman will get into the details. We have been thoughtfully and strategically working on this issue for over a decade. It was in 2006 when the first Portland air toxic study results were released, bringing to our attention the fact that Portlanders faced elevated health risks as a result of exposure to diesel pollution. I'd like to thank Commissioner Saltzman for your early leadership on this work. It was at his direction that at the Office of Sustainable Development, we worked with Multnomah County to obtain $2.3 million in grant funding to support retrofits and upgrades of our own equipment. And while that work needs to continue, it's time that we turn our attention to the next step. As part of that fleet upgrade project, we piloted a similar contracting standard on a voluntary basis on a handful of both city and county projects. And at that time, we heard loud and clear from the contracting community that we needed to slow down and take a regional approach. And we have done just that. In 2016, we convened a regional work group to address this purpose, and we come to you today with many of our regional partners in the room demonstrating a commitment to do this across the Portland metro area. So we have representatives from the Port of Portland, from Multnomah County, from Metro, from the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, and also Washington County has been observing throughout this process. The problem before us is clear. The steps we need to take to address the problem is clear. We believe that now is the right time, and along with our regional partners in Multnomah County, took decisive action this morning. Now, I'm going to briefly cover why this matters in the first place. Diesel exhaust is a complex mixture of gases and particles. The public health concern comes primarily from ultra-fine particles emitted from diesel engines. These particles can be very small, less than a micrometer. And just to put that in context, that's 100 times smaller than the width of a human hair. And the small size of these particles allows them to bypass the body's natural defenses, penetrating deep into the lungs and passing through directly to the bloodstream, and thus gets transported throughout the body, leading to a series of wide-ranging health effects in respiratory, cardiovascular, and even the nervous system. Diesel is a known human carcinogen, as identified by the International Agency of Research on Cancer, typically expressed as lung and bladder cancers. Diesel particulates are also known to increase risk of heart attacks and are suspected as a causal factor in increasing risk of autism and ALS, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease. Children and the elderly are especially vulnerable. Asthma incidence is a concern for children, and California determined that diesel exhaust is one of the five most hazardous pollutants for children for its role in asthma. The elderly are especially vulnerable to heart disease from episodic and long-term exposure from to diesel pollution. Also, we know through work at the Multnomah County Health Department that there is a disproportionate impact on African American and Latino populations in our city. They face three times higher exposure rates than the average resident. And that has to do with the neighborhoods in which those populations are living that are close to development and transportation hub activities. In 2006, DEQ first completed that PAT study, the Portland Air Toxics Assessment, and has since then has done additional modeling on that. And the study used local meteorology, topography, and emissions information about population, neighborhood, car, truck, industrial, and smaller sources to predict air toxics. Levels of diesel particulate matter were found to be above the benchmark concentrations recommended by the Oregon Air Toxic Science Advisory Committee and the recently adopted health-based benchmarks by the Oregon Environmental Quality Commission. Diesel exhaust poses one of the highest health risks in the Portland metro area of any air toxic contaminant that was evaluated in the report. Portland Metro has the highest concentrations of diesel pollution in the state of Oregon, as you've heard. And this graphic shows the elevated levels across the Portland area, but particularly in north and northeast Portland. Based on the EPA's most recent national assessment of air toxic concentrations, they found that Multnomah County ranks in the top 3% of counties nationally for concentration of diesel particulates. This chart shows diesel particulate sources and why we are focusing on construction today. This data is also from the Portland Air Toxic Study, the 2017 modeling and shows that 65% of diesel emissions in the Portland area are coming from non-road sources. 10% are coming from buildings and residential, industrial, commercial, 2% from marine, 7% from rail, and 16% for on-road. The on-road sector is already regulated through manufacturing standards. These emission standards have more recently now been applied to off-road equipment and construction equipment. New engines and exhaust controls can reduce diesel particulate pollution up to 95% on our projects. In the absence of broader statewide regulation, clean diesel contracting provides an opportunity to significantly reduce emissions on public projects. This action is an important leadership opportunity on a significant public health issue. As the key task for our regional work group, we studied and surveyed existing contracting programs. We hired a contractor, Emissions Advantage, who evaluated programs around the country and made recommendations to us about the best way for us to proceed. And we used that information to develop our own criteria for how we'd evaluate different alternatives. And we knew that reducing diesel emissions was the top, but it was also important to do that in a manner that addressed technical limitations and potential safety concerns of retrofits, did not create a large administrative burden on our contractors or our agencies, and, critically, does not adversely impact small disadvantaged businesses that work on our projects or work against our DBE participation goals. We have reported our findings and recommendations to internal and external stakeholders and solicited their feedback. To be clear, what we're proposing isn't a new concept, but it has been done all over the country. Our contractor evaluated 18 different programs, including states, cities, transportation departments, transit authorities, universities, and a port authority. Our recommendation today is based on soundly on national practices and the best practices that we've seen around the country. And with that, I'll hand this off to Stacy Foreman at Procurement Services.
Good afternoon. So,
Good afternoon.
My name is Stacy Foreman. I work in Procurement Services, part of the Bureau of Revenue and Financial Services. So, I'm going to spend the next couple of minutes highlighting some of the recommendations that this regional collaboration has developed. These are contained in Exhibit A, attached to the resolution today. So, first and foremost, what is the goal? So, at the end of program implementation, our goal is that the diesel equipment on our construction sites will be much, much cleaner. So, that includes for non-road equipment that they will be meeting EPA Tier 4 emission level standards, and for on-road equipment, in particular dump trucks and cement mixers, that they will be meeting the emissions levels associated with models 2007 or newer. That doesn't mean that all contractors have to go out and buy new equipment. One of the compliance mechanisms for this is that they can retrofit older engines utilizing best available control technology, emission retrofit devices. And, of course, alternative fueled vehicles and equipment are also another compliance option. Another recommendation I want to highlight from Exhibit A is that we are proposing a phased-in implementation approach. This phased-in approach was developed by the collaborative group based on feedback we heard directly from contractors during an August 22nd external stakeholder work group that we held. This allows contractors more time to plan for those new equipment purchases or retrofitting existing equipment. It also spreads that cost burden over multiple years as opposed to having them face those costs in a compact time of 1 or 2 years. The other change we made to original recommendations based on the feedback from contractors was that we reduce the scope of the on-road standard in that instead of having it apply to all on-road engines coming onto our sites, that we would limit it to cement mixers and dump trucks. The third element I want to highlight from the recommendations is that we do know that the exemptions will be needed over the course of implementation. However, we will be coming back to you with some concrete examples of what that exemption criteria will look like and the process that will be required for exemptions to be granted.
Can I ask a question off that last slide?
Yes.
So the last bullet arguably might apply to some of the minority contractors that get the sub work and they have a single dump truck or a couple of dump trucks. and could demonstrate it's a hardship to invest in the upgrades. Is part of the proposal some kind of mechanism to help MWESB contractors make this transition?
Right, and we're going to get to that in the next slide.
Thank you.
Yep. So, as just mentioned, we know from experience over the past 10 years that one of the greatest concerns is the impact that such a standard would have on our smaller firms and our the disadvantaged minority women-owned businesses that we're actively seeking to do business with at the city. And so one of the primary recommendations that this group has come up with is to find funding for those firms to help them upgrade their equipment. And most notably, we are strongly advocating for allocation of the VW settlement funds that the state will be distributing and determining allocation at the next session, that some of that money goes directly to this kind of program work to help certified firms meet these types of requirements. And also, I want to add that... So I'm going to go to the next steps. As mentioned, we will be coming back with a more finalized proposal for the Clean Air Construction Standard and Associated Program. During that time, we will continue to work with regional partners and stakeholders, internal and external, including the DMWESB community, contracting community. And we will be developing funding estimates that to help us target and advocate for those funds at the state level for DMWESB firms, as well as identifying cost estimates associated with any general fund resources that we may need to help implement this program. So with that, I'm going to turn it back over to Kyle for some closing remarks.
Thank you, Stacey. You know, Portland's sustainability work is internationally renowned. We have been a leader in all areas that Susan highlighted in her presentation. And I mention this because this resolution really is about that leadership. This effort truly hits the triple bottom line. Environmentally, we're improving air quality and reducing the climate-forcing effects of black carbon. Socially, we're improving health of all Portlanders, but especially those who are most vulnerable. And economically, because this work, the Environmental Protection Agency found that there is a $10 return for every dollar that we invest in reducing diesel emissions. And with that, I'd like to thank you for your consideration, and we have some invited testimony.
Very good. Thank you for your testimony. I would like to introduce Multnomah County Chair Kafori, and I was panicking because I wasn't sure if she was here, and she was sitting perfectly behind Susan, so I could not see her. As you heard, colleagues, during the presentation, this is actually a joint effort that was started with Multnomah County over a decade ago, and that started with our own fleets, and now, of course, the next step that's addressed by this particular resolution is to ensure that our own construction projects don't aggravate air quality in our area. This has been a very important partnership between a number of different entities. The most important partner in this, from our perspective, has been Multnomah County. We're pleased to have Multnomah County Chair Deborah Kafori here today. I had the honor of testifying in front of the Board of County Commissioners as they passed their sister resolution this morning. The city and the county staff have spent more than 2 years working with our regional partners. That includes Clackamas County, Washington County, the Port of Portland, Metro, and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality to build a regional approach on this issue. So we are very pleased to have Chair Kafori from Multnomah County here today. Thanks for being here, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to chat with you today. As you heard earlier today, my colleagues and I passed a similar resolution committing Multnomah County to making sure that our public construction projects are clean air construction projects. And with your action today, we will send an important message. The era of dirty diesel engines is coming to an end. Over the past several years, between moss studies and smoke from wildfires, I think that Portlanders are waking up to the fact that we have bad air quality in our region. And one of the main culprits is emissions from older diesel engines. For most of my life, I thought that Portland was a pristine, beautiful place. But the reality is that no matter where you live in the Portland metro area, you are exposed to diesel at levels well above the health benchmarks. And if you happen to live near highways or rail yards, you are 542 times the acceptable risk level from diesel emissions alone. And as is so often in the case with environmental problems, the pollution, while the pollution affects all of us, it is worse for some of us. Diesel exhaust pollution in particular, it has disproportionate impact on African Americans and Latinos. Thank you. Individually, we can't do much about this, but collectively, we can make a big difference. For those of you who wish that the state would take the lead, I'm with you. But the fact is, the state legislature has not solved this problem. So here we are. But the good news is that local agencies are part of the collaboration and are committed to making things better here in our communities. And this is something that Mayor Wheeler and I are committed to getting done. By adopting identical standards across jurisdictions, we are sending a signal to the marketplace. Clean equipment on public contracts is the new expectation. And I am confident that with the county and the city taking the lead, that other jurisdictions and other organizations will join in this effort. People may say that our efforts are insufficient to solve this problem, or that we should wait for someone else to come up with a better solution. But we have a responsibility to act, because the health and well-being of our community is on the line. And just because we can't do everything doesn't mean that we shouldn't do something. And while clean diesel contracting won't solve the whole problem, it is a big step in the right direction. The time to act is now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Kifori. We appreciate your partnership on this. Next, we have Dr. Erica Mosesson, the Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine and President-elect of the Oregon Thoracic Society.
Thoracic.
Thank you. Sorry I mispronounced that.
It's fine. Thank you for this opportunity to address you. I'm a lung doctor and an ICU doctor, so I take care every day of patients who either suffer from diseases that are either caused by diesel particulate exhaust or are made worse by diesel particulate exhaust. And I know someone prior already kind of touched on all the different health effects, so I think one thing I can help with a little bit is sometimes it seems really abstract about these multipliers, about how $1, say, you know, invested can yield $10 in benefits. But I really see with my patients the economic burden of not being able to breathe. So we know that when we clean up particulate exhaust, all kids, not just kids with asthma, actually miss fewer sick days from school. So there's parents that aren't having to stay home with their kids. Inhaler costs for an average for a family, especially without generics, if you're doing two inhalers, those things can run anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 a year. Whether you're paying that out of pocket or just with copays, it's a pretty big drag on the family budget. There's also a genetic component to a lot of these things. So a lot of the times you'll have one family where the kids both have asthma, a parent's got asthma, there's COPD, and so you kind of have this multiplier of people missing sick days, missing work days, losing their job because they just don't quite, they're just not quite fast enough or working hard enough because of their limitations from lung disease that people are frequently not willing to mention. I also think it's kind of hard for people to understand how these particles we can't see really hurt us. And so I kind of use the analogy of why does anyone inhale drugs, right? Like why does anyone smoke cigarettes or whatever else people are smoking in Portland now? And the reason is because within a heartbeat, it's in your brain. It's in the rest of your body. So smoking something and inhaling diesel particulate exhaust, it's like injecting it into your veins. That's what our lungs were designed to do. They're designed to take the air and put it in our bloodstream and circulate it around our organs. That's why diesel particulate exhaust affects every organ. It causes cognitive changes in children. It causes dementia when it gets into the brain. It causes heart attacks, strokes, right ventricular failure. It causes COPD, and it causes, and more importantly, if you have COPD and asthma, it worsens it. It lands people in the hospital and clinics. People miss work. It's a carcinogen. And so even though you can't see it, it really devastates the health of communities. So I strongly encourage cleaning up the air to help our families here.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony. Next up, Mary Pivito from the Neighbors for Clean Air. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify in support, strong support for this resolution. My name is Mary Pivato. I'm president of Neighbors for Clean Air, and our organization has been actively working to address the diesel pollution issue since basically I finished my tenure almost 10 years ago on the Portland Air Toxic Solutions Advisory Committee that Oregon DEQ had convened, and they identified diesel pollution as one of the single biggest risk drivers of air toxics in our region. So I'm really excited about this kind of step forward. We've been waiting for the state legislature and the state to take this up, and we've been waiting for too long. And I think it's really important to see that the city understands that we can't be a leader in sustainability with dirty air. We need clean air for healthy communities, and we won't get there without addressing diesel pollution. So I want to highlight just 4 points. I think the underscoring the health impacts of this and the equity impacts are really important, and I think those cases have been made for us. In fact, I think you and the city mayor, all the whereases, did a very good job of setting this out. But I want to really talk about why this specific policy is really, really strong, and there's 4 key points. Basically, diesel pollution is everybody's problem, but it's nobody's responsibility. And so the city's involvement in the clean contracting collaboration steps into this void, and it does the hard work to identify feasible first steps and necessary building blocks for regional and frankly, hopefully, a statewide collaboration to leverage our money, our public dollars, to deliver great public health benefit. I want to also underscore that there has been a more recent uproar and outrage around air toxics and higher visibility of the problem of air toxics. And we've been leading a lot of community workshops and working with community. And I will tell you, to a person, people are addressing the problem of diesel pollution in their communities. And people see this problem, and they're really showing up, and they're talking about it, and they're frustrated that the whole mobilization of the Cleaner Air Oregon program, which is a really important and significant program for our state, will not address diesel emissions at all. And so I think it's really important that the communities that are suffering from this and haven't seen any solutions to deal with it see this as very important steps forward. The other thing that was brought up earlier, the VW settlement money, is an unprecedented opportunity for us to invest in solutions in this area. And I don't think we can underscore that enough. I do think we can really target that money to ensure that minority contractors, women-owned businesses, can be prioritized in getting that money, especially in the Portland metro area where the emissions are highest. Those are all conditions of the state decree and the state guidelines that were set. But it also should be put in perspective. That money represents almost 8 times more than we have spent in Oregon in 2 decades on this problem. This is a significant amount of money that can really, really help move us forward. And it's really important, I think, to see our public leaders and our public entities leverage that money to see real good in the community. So I just want to underscore how important this is for our communities, and I really appreciate the leadership that you're taking to address this problem and to take the steps that we can take. I'd like to bring attention to some testimony that's going to come in from our partners at Northwest Environmental Defense Center and the Green Energy Institute that have really looked at the policy options and seen the holes of, you know, where we have difficulties addressing construction activity specifically from a state regulatory framework because of preemptions under the Clean Air Act. Their testimony will be part of the public record. But it's really important to understand that this is the leverage that you have with public funding to really get at this. And Dr. Linda George from Portland State University had done some preliminary diesel emissions monitoring. And it should be underscored that not only with those numbers of the total volume that construction represents, but every single one of those sites, when she took her diesel monitor around to the different types of sources, it was the construction, the development sites that really hit the highest levels of diesel emissions right there. And these are in our neighborhoods and in our communities. We all know, we all see the cranes, we all see the buildings that we're living among for months while they construct these new buildings. So it's really, all of that data has been supported and continues to be supported by the actual monitoring that's happening. So I want to thank you for addressing this, taking the steps, and we really look forward to continuing to work with you to get this passed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary, for your testimony. Commissioner Fritz.
I just want to thank you, Mary, for 10 years of leadership on this issue. Your expertise and the fact that you've been suggesting this very thing for so long, including the Volkswagen settlement, is outstanding, and thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. Thank you to all of the commissioners.
Thank you for coming in. Our second to the last invited guest is Emerald Bogue from the Port of Portland. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Emerald Bogue from the Port of Portland, here today to share with you the same thing that I shared with the County Board this morning, which is support and appreciation for your leadership here. We've been at the table, the multi-jurisdictional table, now for quite some time, working to see if this is feasible, to see if we can chart a path forward where we have a uniform standard. That work isn't done yet. But what's happening today is significant because what we see is two jurisdictions moving forward and deciding to be leaders here. And that leadership isn't simple, just as most leadership decisions are not simple. The stakes are high. They're high for minority contractors working to maintain a foothold in the market. The stakes are high for public agencies managing projects on a budget. And the stakes are the very highest for the communities breathing the air. So we thank you for moving forward with this. We will be watching closely and working collaboratively to figure out how to land this right. And we appreciate the city's approach and we appreciate the county's approach. Happy to answer any questions you have.
I just want to say thanks, Emerald, for the Port of Portland has been very important to this partnership. We couldn't do it without you. So thanks.
Right back at you. Thank you.
Thank you. Look forward to seeing you again. And our last invited guest, certainly not least, Chris Warner from PBOT. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Mayor, members of City Council, Chris Warner, Interim Director of PBOT. At PBOT, we're committed to providing 6 inches, Portlanders with an effective and safe transportation system, and that includes fostering health within and around our construction sites. As we heard today, the diesel particulate matter presents a serious threat both to the health of our site workers and to our neighbors. Along with other city bureaus, we've been starting to do this by reducing those diesel emissions through the upgrades of our fleet. We recognize the value in taking these next steps to invest in cleaner air by addressing emissions from our contractors' diesel construction equipment. We look forward to working with Procurement Services and BPS over the next few months to craft a clean air construction standard that is both effective and practical. While the investment in clean air will have some upfront costs, we support the commitment that the resolution puts forward to estimate those costs and secure the appropriate resources. Done thoughtfully, we can both improve air quality and keep our commitment to getting Portland moving. So, I might take one moment of personal privilege to thank Kevin Downing from DEQ. Kevin and I have worked many, many years together, both in Salem, and he recently retired from DEQ and has really been moving this along. And I just wanted to recognize Kevin because I saw him here today, and I appreciate his friendship over the years and also all of his work on this. So thank you.
Any
questions?
Thank you, and thank you for acknowledging the work of DEQ in particular. Thank you, sir, for being here. Very good. So that brings Commissioner Fritz.
I have a question for Susan questions. Anderson.
Yeah. I have a question or two also.
Come on up.
Mine's an easy one.
Oh, all right. Yeah, Dan's is going to be a grilling.
Okay. I'm rolling my sleeves here.
Would it be possible to bring it back by December 13th instead of the 20th?
I would think so. Yes.
Because the 20th is the very last meeting before the Christmas holiday, and that might be a difficult time for getting a quorum and getting people to come to testify. So would you agree with a friendly amendment to change the date to December 13th? Is that all right?
I'll be here testifying at that time instead of on the side of the table. But
very good. Without objection.
Do I need a second for a friendly amendment?
Or second.
Thank you.
We have a motion and a second. We'll call that.
Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Dan, you had a...
Well, this might be for a question for procurement, although I'm sure Susan or Kyle can answer. So how big of a definition of public works contracts are we employing here? Are we getting at everything that truly has public money in it? Affordable housing projects, Broadway Corridor, urban renewal project,
Yes, anything that we directly contract and there's public dollars going into. Now, we are discussing if there's a certain dollar threshold that should trigger the requirement, and so that will be one of the details that we're fleshing out over the next couple months.
Okay. So we're very interested in your opinion on that and of all the commissioners on how far and how deep do we go, because that's why we're doing the resolution instead of just coming with the ordinances, because we want to have a little bit of time now to walk through all of the proposal in depth with you, and so that you're able to give us a little more direction on the sideboards.
Well, I think it should be as all-encompassing as possible. So, yeah, I'm just concerned if we draw too many lines about what constitutes public investment, and we start talking about, well, if it's only a direct public investment as opposed to a secondary or tertiary public investment, that we're not getting at all the things we should be getting at, given the enormity of this public health problem.
I think one of the things that we could look at, depending on your interests, is having the same for everyone. Or when we did the green building policy, we had a citywide, we had a PDC, and we had a housing projects policy, and they varied just a little bit because the projects were just a little bit different. So we may look at seeing if we need to tweak them just a bit.
Well, that's a good reminder to me and a refresher. But so, clearly, when we talk about public works projects, we are talking about PDC projects, aren't we? Funded?
Prosper, yeah.
Okay, so there's no gray area around that anymore.
Yep.
Okay, good. My final thought and concern is just that, while I know this is extremely important in terms of potential impact on minority contractors, I think the gravity of this problem is clearly a paramount public health problem, and the policy shouldn't be driven necessarily by concerns about impacts on minority contractors. That shouldn't be the cart, horse driving the show, whatever the saying is. That shouldn't be driving our final deliberations on this policy. It's an important concern. We want to try to mitigate the impact on them. But this is an enormous public health problem, as we've just had outstanding, stunning, revealing testimony to me. And this needs to be acted on, and not our voices. Our action should not be drowned out by the voices of those who are going to be loudest in this chamber. So I hope we will come up with a good public policy, and I hope you'll help us by giving us as strong a starting point as possible.
Thank you.
I have a quick question.
Commissioner Udaly.
Isn't that what the VW settlement funds are being considered for, though, assisting minority and disadvantaged?
Yes, correct.
Because I agree, we need to do it. Period, but I do think we have an obligation to come up with a solution for the very people who have really borne the brunt of the pollution and already have barriers and challenges to economic opportunity. So I'm really thankful that that's coming alongside this resolution.
Right. The VW settlement using those funds has been a priority in our legislative process so far, getting ready for next year. It doesn't mean we have it in pocket. And so we'll look at other options, too, in terms of what we want to do is have the playing field be level. So if the subs, which are often the women and minority-owned firms, often the prime could cover the cost. If all the primes had to cover the cost, then we're on a even playing field. We don't want to go there. We would much rather have funding resources to be able to do it. But if we ended up there, I think the most important part is making sure that no one's at a disadvantage compared to anybody else.
Can I piggyback off of what Commissioner Daly said? Because you've asked for our feedback, and you know, with all due respect, Dan is retiring from the council, so we're going to be implementing this under a different council. I would like to see, in fact, I will insist on a robust plan to offset the impacts on MWESB contractors for two reasons. One is what Commissioner Udaly has already eloquently stated, that by and large, these are communities that have borne the brunt of the pollution. But the second is, one of the areas that we have failed consistently is creating prime contracting opportunities for the minority contracting community. And so what we get when we have procurement reports in this council on a regular basis is things like flagging and trucking. Now, in a fairer system, people would actually be competing for the prime contract. But what we have done is we've allocated these other services where a group of entrepreneurs have created a market, but they have been effectively shut out of another market for a whole host of reasons, including access to capital. So we understand that you cannot prevent the implementation of these rules solely on the basis of an equity lens. But I would say that I think what you're going to get is strong guidance from this council going forward, that we are interested in looking at aggressive measures to help people make that transition so they can still compete. It would be adding insult to indignity to be told that historically that you can't compete for the prime contracts and then put people out of business because we set a new regulatory standard. And I can't support that.
Very good. Carla, this is a resolution. Is there any public testimony?
Yes, we have 4 people signed up.
Very good.
The first 3, please come on up, are Rafaela Hsu Flanders, Cynthia Yee, and Linda Nedekoven.
Welcome. 3 minutes each. Name for the record, please. You can go ahead and start if you'd like.
Thank you, Mayor Wheeler and Commissioners. My name is Rafaela Hsu Flanders. I'm the engagement manager at Oregon Environmental Council. We have submitted written testimony as well, outlining our support for the clean diesel procurement policy. I'm going to echo some of what's already been said today, underscoring the fact that in Multnomah County, most residents are exposed to diesel pollution at levels higher than the state's health benchmark, and in some areas, many times higher. Diesel pollution is also an environmental justice issue. As folks have already mentioned, as communities of color often have 2 to 3 times more exposure to diesel particulate matter than majority white communities. I want to thank you for pursuing local solutions, since the Oregon legislature has not yet taken action. By affirming your support for this procurement policy, you will accelerate the cleanup of dirty diesel engines, which will result in benefits to our climate and to public health. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Linda Nedekoven, speaking as an individual resident of the Hosford-Abernathy neighborhood, and can assure you that my neighborhood has long been very concerned about these issues. We're blessed with a freeway, a state highway, innumerable new apartments going up on Division Street, and, of course, a busy railroad. We realize that you don't have a way to directly impact many of these other things that are resulting in Abernathy School consistently being reported in USA Today as having some of the worst air quality in the nation. So we are very grateful that you're taking a lead in an area that you do have some say over. So we're hopeful that the details that emerge as this goes forward will plug as many loopholes as possible. And I'm very committed to the equity lens that you're applying to the situation, and thank you for that. I'm mostly here today just to say thank you and to urge you to keep on looking for ways that you can collaborate and find other leverage points for addressing this issue until we can get some statewide action happening. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thanks for your continued advocacy. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name is Cynthia Yee. For almost 10 years, I've lived on the South Park blocks. During that period of time, I've noticed a steady degradation of air quality in that area, especially as we have many construction projects in our area. To alleviate some of my respiratory symptoms, I have a HEPA filter, which I have going 24 hours a day. I also consult. There are many smartphone apps that I consult to see what the air quality is before I venture out. Currently, I have family members who are encouraging me to move to different parts of the United States where the air quality is not as big of an issue. I would hate to leave Portland because I participated in the art scene, concerts, plays, ballet, so I would hate to leave the area. But simply for health reasons, I may need to do that. And I certainly support your efforts today, and thank you for this opportunity.
thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. And we want you to stay.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Carla, was there one more individual?
Yes. The last person is Bill Failing.
I think Bill signed up. Bill signed up for the next item, Carla. He's here for the Strohackers.
No, not, but he signed up for this, and now we have to hear what he has to say. No. We'll see you in a few minutes, Bill. Very good. So with that, colleagues, any further discussion before we take up the amendments? First of all, the amendment that I put on the table, could we call the roll on that, please, regarding equity?
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment's adopted. The next amendment was put forth by Commissioner Fritz regarding the December 13th hearing date.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Udaly?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Wheeler?
Aye. The amendment's adopted. To the main motion, please call the roll.
Saltzman?
Well, I want to thank everybody, all the governments who are partners to this, these new clean air standards. I really appreciate the work, and I realize it's like, you know, weaving, and you got to make sure you can go where you have the jurisdiction to go, and I think you've done that very well. And I do want to also recognize Kevin Downing for his longstanding work on this area. He's been at every turn of the way. He's always been there with ideas and opportunities for us to do more in this area. So I just wanted to thank him while he's here as well. And this is great work, and as I just, you know, said a few minutes ago, I hope we stay strong on this, because this is really one of the most important, and I think it's been underscored in all of us with the forest fires impacts that we've suffered and we probably will be enduring on a more frequent basis from everything all the certified smart people say on OPB and other places, that this is something that's a characteristic of our air quality that we're probably going to have to live with for a long time. So it just underscores the need to address these very fine particulates that do so much damage and can do so much damage to young people and old people alike. So good work. Pleased to vote aye.
Udaly?
Also very pleased to support this resolution. Heavy-duty diesel vehicles and the non-road vehicles are among the top contributors to airborne toxins, and I might be slightly biased because I live in one of those hot spots in the city in Woodlawn, which is close to the railroad and an industrial area, and I thought that I was doing good being a mile or two from the freeway, and come to find out I'm just as bad off in that neighborhood. Environmental justice is racial justice when it's done right, so I want to reiterate my concern and support for efforts around ensuring that we're not creating hardship for already disadvantaged contractors. The 10 lowest income and 10 highest minority census block groups in Portland experience higher than average exposure to all air toxins. I just want to say that out loud for everyone in the room and for everyone watching. Pleased to see the coordinated approach between government agencies and regional partners, because as I hope everyone knows, air toxins don't recognize municipal boundaries. And the Portland Airshed actually includes the entirety of Multnomah, Clackamas, Washington County, as well as sections of Yamhill and Clark County. So it'd be great if we could get them in there too. Just, you know, just a suggestion. It's been at least 10 years, so thank you, Mary, and thank you, Oregon Environmental Council and Portland City Club and all the citizen activists and advocates who have not relented in bringing attention to this issue. We've known it's a problem for a long time. We've only seen slow incremental change, and I feel like this is a really significant big step forward. Of course, we need the state to make some aggressive changes as well. And this was a topic of conversation last night, the North Portland traffic kind of kickoff mix and mingle that Speaker Kotek and I attended. And I do know that several of our Portland area legislators are going to be working on this issue in the next session, and I hope that it'll be a priority for City Council, and we really need all of our partners and our community members to bring pressure to bear on them this session. It would be a shame to have to wait 2 more years for any progress on this issue. All right. I'm to the end of my post-it notes, and I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Fritz. First of all, everything she said. Thank you, Commissioner, for summarizing. Thank you, Mary Pivito, again, for your leadership from the community on this. You've been working on it for a very long time with these exact solutions or very close to them. Thanks, Kevin Downing and the Department of Environmental Quality. You know, often that's kind of reviled as a, you know, why don't they do something? And it's really challenging, and I know you've been had few staff and not the political support. I do know that Speaker Kotek has been trying to work on this for a very long time also, be it representing North Portland. She's particularly involved in it. Thank you for the presentation and particularly the information that when we think about diesel, I think many of us think about cars, or what I get in my emails most is leaf blowers. Well, it turns out that those are not the things that are actually causing most of the impact. And so by getting to the heart of it in a way that is perhaps manageable, especially with the Volkswagen settlement money, this is a really thoughtful approach. Thank you, Susan Anderson, for bringing this resolution in advance of your becoming a private citizen. I'm looking forward to hearing you testify and just really telling us what you feel in December, although I haven't noticed you being shy in that regard over the past 10 years either. But thank you for your leadership on this issue and many more at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. And finally, thank you, Mayor, for your commitment to this, for your leadership at the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, in particular for not filling both of these chambers and having 60 people testifying on something which is really a good idea and all of us get it, and you didn't need to have 60 people testifying. So that's different on topics like this, and I appreciate it very much. Aye.
But when you're fourth in the queue and the mayor is the author of the resolution to follow, you should be brief. So I want to concur with everything that my colleagues have said. I have the honor of leading the Bureau of Environmental Services and the Parks Bureau, and it seems to me that if you look at the Columbia Wastewater Treatment Plant upgrade, as well as replacing aging pipe throughout the city and a number of other projects, and then building out new parks, building on Commissioner Fritz's legacy, we're going to have a substantial amount of public works projects that are covered by this, so we look forward to getting it right. I will join with my colleague, Commissioner Udaly, in making sure that we find the right balance with MWESB contractors. And I want to say that as wonderful as this is, really, in fairness, Susan, this is one of a suite of things that you've had a hand in, including weaning us of diesel in our city fleets and using all kinds of innovative ways to get natural gas and other kinds of renewable natural gas and other kinds of energy sources. So this is good work, and I'm very pleased to vote aye.
Wheeler.
Well, I'm going to be brief, believe it or not, and thank you for Commissioner Fritz for mentioning brevity as being a high value. I agree. So I just want to thank our partners. Number one, I want to thank the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability and Susan and everybody who worked so hard on this. Number two, we could not have done this without our regional partners, in particular Multnomah County, but also Clackamas County, Washington County, the Port of Portland, Metro, and the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. This is a partnership that's been engaged for the better part of 2 years to bring this forward today. I want to thank Amy Rathfelder for my office and Amanda Watson for my office for their diligent work as well. Now a sober note. This is leading by example, and it's tremendously important that the City of Portland lead by example with our regional partners. But this in and of itself will not solve the problem, and it is a serious problem. And as Commissioner Saltzman indicated, it is a high-priority public health issue. And we have prioritized clean diesel in our legislative agenda every one of the last many years. And we have not made the progress that we need to make on this issue at the state level. And so I'm hoping that by bringing this coalition together,
and having all of us on the same page and working hard on this and leading and demonstrating that it can be done successfully, that this will help break loose whatever log jams exist at the state level to address, which is of significant public health consequences for the people in this community. So let's